On this page, you will see Book 2 of the Nicomachean Ethics by Aristotle. Please do not be daunted or afraid by the fact that this is Aristotle, especially if you've never studied classical Greek philosophy before. We won't be going into a great deal of detail, and you're welcome to spend as much or as little time looking at this material as you like. But I would like to highlight the points within this section that are particularly important for our study of the virtue. And we've already hinted at some of them or alluded to some of them in our introductory material. This is the end of Book 1 and the whole of Book 2 of the Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle's great work on the subject of human morality and human ethical behavior. And notice that at the very beginning he distinguishes between virtues that are, as he puts it, of the intellectual, of the dianoetic order, and those which are more strictly moral or ethical. The virtues of the intellect or the dianoetic virtues are wisdom, understanding, and prudence. In Greek, sophia, sunesis, and phronesis. This goes exactly into chapter 89 of Evagrius Practicos, as we shall see. So this is the real origin, although it's mediated through other texts, of an understanding of these high, what Evagrius would call contemplative virtues, their origin in Aristotle. Aristotle then, at the end of Book 1, focuses in Book 2 on the practical virtues. And he is particularly concerned in this book, and one might say even throughout his work, with virtue as something that demands practice. As we will see in the Desert Fathers and in the Christian tradition, the quest for virtue and the understanding of vice preeminently concerns the thoughts. One is aware of what the thought is, what is the temptation that is being offered long before there is any question of it being put into effect, either in virtuous action or in sin. It's the assessment, the sifting, the analysis of the awareness of Christ's presence or absence from thoughts that allows the Christian, and particularly the Christian monastic, to engage in the work of seeking after virtue and rejecting vice. But for Aristotle, especially in this book on the practical virtue, the virtues are accomplished in action. It is through repetition of particular kinds of action that that action becomes habitual, becomes normal, becomes the ordinary practice or the habit of a person. Hexis, or habit, becomes for him a specific definition, or has already become in this work, a definition of what virtue is all about. Now, in another part of this work, he does discuss those intellectual virtues which we mentioned, which we won't be looking at again in this work, which are not so much concerned with actions externally as with interior experiences, as with thinking. But in this book, which concerns most of the virtues which we will find described in the monastic literature, but they're here described in Aristotle's own unique way, he is concerned with action, putting into effect. I should mention that I have divided this Book 2 up in a sort of a non-traditional way by colored bars, which are marked. If you drop down, the first colored bar is red, and it's entitled Emphasis on Practice. And if you drop down a little further, there's a blue bar marked number 2, Vices as Defect or Excess. That's what I'm going to refer to as we move very briskly through this book and notice the highlights. Beginning at Book 2, before that first red bar, notice that he says that what we've just mentioned, moral virtue or ethical virtue, comes about as a result of habit, as a result of practice. Then if you drop down to the red bar, he emphasizes yet again the significance of practices, of engaging in action for the purpose of acquiring virtue, acquiring what for him is this midpoint, this mean, this balance between opposing vices. In what I've labeled number 2, the blue bar that's entitled Vices as Defect or Excess, you'll see a section that describes these two different poles of vice. One can either be defective in something that one is supposed to put into action, or one can overuse, use too much, use inappropriately something, especially use it excessively, and either one on that spectrum constitutes a vice. virtue is the midpoint, as we shall see. Dropping down further, we can note only in passing, and this will come up particularly in our study of Evagrius, number 3, early understandings of apatheia. Apatheia is a word which is prized in the philosophical tradition. Aristotle mentions it has to be understood carefully and properly. It doesn't mean the absence of feeling. It does not mean anesthesia or insensibility, which is a vice, of defect. It means the not being swept up by that which renders you unfree. And so he speaks in particular about not using apatheia in an absolute sense, that it applies to concrete circumstances. It implies a not being made passive in specific circumstances. Just noting that in passing. Dropping down then to number 4, the brown bar, only practice establishes the practical virtues. We've already mentioned this, and this is something that Aristotle describes in some detail in this section. Dropping down then further to a red bar, the mean as balance. Here he tries to describe the terms that he is going to use in describing, in categorizing virtues. That which is equidistant from extremes, that which is in the middle. Dropping down a little bit towards the bottom of that first paragraph, a master of any art avoids excess and defect, but seeks the intermediate, seeks the midpoint, not in the object, that is to say, not the object's midpoint, but in its relationship to us. This midpoint is not something that is exteriorly definable in terms of the object itself, but it has to do with our own capacity. And as we'll see, it becomes a profoundly personal question. Virtue, he says, dropping a little further down, must have the quality of aiming at the intermediate. Virtue is a kind of mean. It's a midpoint. It aims at what is intermediate. There's a blue bar, number 6. He points out what is very true, that although there are many forms of vice, although there are many ways of misusing our capacity, there's only one virtue for each capacity. That is to say, there's only one proper or balanced use of it. And he says it's possible to fail in many ways, but to succeed is possible in only one way. And he concludes that paragraph, for people are good in but one way, but they're bad in many. So vices can be a variety along the extremes, but virtue is always at the midpoint. He says it's a state of character. It is a hexis. It is a habitual state concerned with choice. Virtue only involves those things over which we have choice. We choose. In the act of choosing to remain in that midpoint between excess and deficiency, we create patterns of behavior called habits, and this is, in the case of something that is life-giving and wholesome, a virtue. Then dropping down, the perhaps most important section of this document is number 7, his list of virtues and vices. Often these are categorized into a chart, and you can see that rather than charting them, I've numbered these different, you might call them capacities or aspects in which he's going to describe virtue, and then tried to make the vice dark blue and the corresponding virtue, or the two corresponding virtues, insofar the one corresponding virtue, forgive me, and in a kind of a dark brown color. So one will have, if you drop down to number 2, the question of pleasure and pain. Temperance is the virtue, and the excess is self-indulgence. The deficiency is insensibility. And you can see how these coming paragraphs then will be color-coded in exactly the same way. Although, one must note, as he says, that occasionally you don't have any name for the state of either excess or deficiency because it is so rare. It's something you just don't encounter in ordinary activity, and so you don't ignore it, you don't pretend that it doesn't exist, but for all practical intents and purposes, it isn't really a concern, and in some cases, there isn't really a good word for it. And so you can see that these are all numbered up through 10, but in fact there are more than that because several of them actually represent subgroups. For example, number 3 has two different subgroups, and the same thing is true with regard to number 4. So this section represents Aristotle's doctrine of the idea of virtue as a midpoint between a vice of excess and a vice of deficiency, and you can see the text description of each of these areas, which evokes his definitions of particular virtues.